You're listening to the podcast on all platforms where podcasts live. You can check her out on Tuesday, June 28th for Social Media Meltdowns at 7:15 p.m. Get tickets at improv.com/Hollywood. The Portuguese word of the day is Sean Palacios. How are you, Sean?
Matthew, it's so good to see you. You're already waiting for me to teach you Portuguese, huh?
I took the next step and I learned two phrases to say to you today. And I'm going to get this wrong, but I took the effort and I want to tell me if I'm saying this right. Obrigado por estar aqui e ótimo ver a voce.
That sounds like you're saying, because see, again,
sounds like nothing
my
Portuguese
is really limited. I can understand it better than I can speak it. What I think you are saying is thank you for being here today.
Exactly.
On the show.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. And I'd used the Google Translator, so obviously.
You did it pretty well. The fact that I could understand that, you knew where to emphasize and how to say the D's and the T. Bravo.
Thank you.
Bravo.
That's how I feel about most Americans speak English. I can kind of understand what they're saying, but a lot of it, at least in LA, I'm like, I'm not cool anymore. Like, you know, there's all these new words and slang, like no cap and sus. And like, I try to be cool, but I just look like, oh, like I'm that guy now. That's like,
no, hardly you are that guy. Hardly.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's so good to see. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, it's so good to see you. I just want to let the listeners know how I know Sean is I was stalking Sean about 10 years ago and there was a whole case and police were involved and it was,
I was sorry to turn you in. It really was uncomfortable, you know?
I was in Interpol, but, my buddy, when I first moved out to LA, like 2009, my friend at the time, his name was Jimmy Tallarico. I kind of lost touch with him, but he would like rave about Sean Palacios. So we went to see you and it was at the, Comedy Store. And I want to say it was the original room. I don't remember, but it's just so funny and so great. And one thing that, cause you're such a great comedian and such a, you know, super
Thanks,
talented.
Matthew, you're so nice.
Thank you. But it's true. You're wonderful. And I just feel like your comedy is timeless. Like it doesn't age, you know, like you just have such great bits and.
No, that's my face with good laser and Botox, but my comedy, my comedy could age. I think it is, but you know, I'm always trying new things and, you know, kind of working off my feet to try and stay, you know, relevant.
Yeah. And it works. I mean, it's incredible. And you did this bit and I watched this recently. And you've done a lot of work for the troops and everything. So like, cheers to you for that, for like the USO stuff. But you did this bit that resonated so much about the American flag. Do you know what I'm talking about? About how you see an American flag.
Where you see, American flags. You know, remember when you used to see the American flag hanging from a car or from a house, and it meant I'm from the United States of America. And now when you see the American flag hanging from a car or someone's house, you're like, oh, shit, that person's crazy. Come on, honey. Let's go trick or treat somewhere else. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But it's so funny and it's so true, though. Like, I remember growing up, like, driving with my dad. It's like, oh, that's the American flag. Never let it touch the ground. It's, you know, you see it in front of the house. Like, it's a beautiful thing. You see it in 2022. I see like an American flag in the car. I'm like, oh, that guy's got a gun in there. That guy's a nut job. You know, like
that guy's a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
He voted for Trump.
Right there.
Yeah. You just, it all 100%. Ends right there. Everything. It's like Bill Gates, you know, was on the island with Jeffrey Epstein. It's like, it represents everything. And I don't know. I mean, just remember, let's go back to 9/11 when everybody put a flag hanging outside their car. They were selling them on every corner and you were like, better get my little American flag up in my, you know,
everywhere
in my Honda Civic, because people got to know that we all stand together as one country and we will not put up with any type of terrorism against human beings. And it was, we'd all united and come together. And now 100%. The flag is, it's divisive.
It is. It's super divisive. It's changed the whole, you know, the whole conversation about patriotism and it's just gotten so divided. And you mentioned the car flags, and if I see like an American flag bumper sticker or something like that, whatever, I still think the same thing. But I don't know about you, but one thing I could never get behind is the LA Lakers antenna flags in LA. I never saw antenna flags until I moved down here.
Yeah.
They were like everywhere. And I remember like I made a joke once, like I think when Kobe passed away, I was like, which was terrible. That's not the joke. But did they lower the antenna flags at half mast? Like, and people like were like, oh, that's not cool. I'm like, what's with the flags?
Man.
What's with the flags? I don't get the antenna flags.
You're like, it's not about Kobe. It's about the flags.
But not the flags. I just.
Yeah. People very set. They are very sensitive to Kobe Bryant, anything. So it's just like.
Yeah. But I'm from Philadelphia originally, where he's from. So I was like, oh, well, like, you know, like I went to high school with Kobe. Like you did. I'm like, no, but like, you know, let's forget about the joke I just made. So people get like offended about stuff like that. But the flag thing is so true, though, when you mentioned that. And people really, I mean, I really do have that like gut reaction. You know, you see someone waving hanging the American flag, and you're just like, what was this guy's problem?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of list is he on?
It means a whole different thing now. And you just kind of look at it and go, uh-oh. And, you know, and there's always like one on the street.
Yeah, right. There's always that one. Now, you and your husband, by the way, are like one of the most gorgeous, good-looking couples ever. You're just a good-looking couple, okay?
Matthew, I don't know what you took or whatever. You're the, like...
It's sober as a dober.
It's so nice. Like it's a Saturday morning. It's so nice of you to even say any of that. You know, I wear a filter, so that's my excuse. But he's good looking in person.
Well, you guys are a great looking couple, and you know, I won't say too much in the air, but I know he's a Brazilian man. So you guys go down. I see you going to Brazil a lot. What is that like as an American? Because you're at this point, you probably blend right in because you know, like the customs and all that. Like, how is that whole, like that?
My husband says I don't blend in and that I'm a gringa, which is really sweet. And he's like, you know, with your Jew face. And I'm like, my Jew face. But you know, I try and blend in once in a while. Like recently we were in his hometown and it's a big city. It's in the state of Minas Gerais, which is about, at 2.5 hours outside São Paulo. But we were at a restaurant once and we ran into someone we knew and I was talking and this girl came up to me and she was like, do you speak English? Are you from America? And she just like, I never met American before. And like she wanted to talk and know. And that was weird that like they were kind of just people were staring at me, but that's not usually the response. Because once in a while you do, you know, English is not completely uncommon in Brazil, but it's not as common as you think.
That was my question. Is it like Germany or other countries where like everyone speaks English for whatever reason? You're like, oh, I guess I don't have to work too hard here. Or is it like not
it's
so
mostly
much?
Portuguese. No, it's mostly Portuguese. People know more Portuguese than they do English, but they are.
Yeah.
They are like fascinated with American culture and they want to be American. So they try to adapt all the American type of things that like we do. Like when we went to Brazil recently, we went to a friend's gender reveal party. Like, why do we even know about like gender reveals? Like seems like such an American annoying thing
that's what we do. I thought. Yeah.
And now they were like, oh, no, we gender reveal parties. We do with America, you know, and I'm like, oh, no, they picked up this like now they're burning down their own houses. Like,
that's amazing that's a thing there. I thought that was just like Western United States.
Exactly.
Like, hey, we're going to blow up set fire to the Angeles National Forest. So
exactly.
Sawyer has a penis.
So that's like we make it cool. So therefore it's cool. And so sometimes when you go to Brazil, you'll see, and my husband and I joke about this because I pointed this out to him, you'll see some stores or restaurants with English names. But they'll put two words together that don't make sense. So it's like the way they interpret English. So
Republican Scientist would be like a muffin shop there.
You're just like, why is that? Like there's a, like for example, my husband has a gym in his hometown right near, and it's called Top Life. And I'm like, do they mean like your best life, your fit life? Like, and he goes, yeah, that's exactly what it means. Why wouldn't you know that? I'm like, because it
your best life.
It doesn't make sense. Top life, like you're at the top. No one would ever say he's at his top life in the United States. But for them, that's like it's English. They put the words together and that it's gonna work out for them.
And it, yeah, and it plays it. I like, okay, so I can get on board with that. You know, there's like different things that they're doing. Are you guys, so you go down there a lot. I'm not trying to make this all about Brazil, but I'm just fascinating with that country. You know, they speak Portuguese. They have the Christ the Redeemer. Everything that's bad about tourism, I like love about there. Like I would be like the worst tourist because I would just want to like see all that. So do you go there like once a month kind of thing? Like
once a month? Oh, what am I? A Bobo Rockefeller? It's expensive to go down to
Lasky Rockefeller.
Yeah, we the most we've gone is twice in a year.
Okay.
It seems like we're down there a lot lately because my brother-in-law had a baby in December, and then my sister-in-law had a baby in February. So within about 5 months time, we went back to meet the newest baby and to go to the baptism. But if I could go, you know, my husband and I talk about it. I would love to go to Brazil at least 3 to 4 times a year if I could make that happen. Unfortunately, I get busy. I work. He works and he doesn't have unlike Brazil that is full of vacation and holiday. They're constantly on vacation in Brazil. Like they, after December,
right. They
literally have like 3 months off that goes up through Carnival in February through like March. I'm like, do you people ever work? But for us here in the United States,
yeah, how does that work?
We don't get that much time off. So you don't want to, you know, Brazil's not so close. You can't make it a weekend trip. You got to put your time in. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I like though. Because we've traveled to like other countries and been to South America a few times, but I like that it's more of a lax kind of culture in the sense that like, you know, not even lax, just you have more time off, you know, you can spend more time.
It's very lax. You can say lax.
Lax is okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm all about the lax, you know, no stress.
They love to take a break in Brazil. They love to drink and take a break and do nothing.
See, that sounds like a great Tuesday to me. Like that's the kind of life I want to emulate.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you about Trailer Park Diaries. If I can jump and put my pinky toe into that pond.
Please.
Right now. I love it. I've listened to all the episodes. Why is it ending? Because to me, this is like a serial throwback. The vibe I got was like, they don't do this kind of medium as much anymore, which I feel like they should. There's like a huge market for it, for this kind of like storytelling. Can you just tell, like jump into like this whole thing a little bit?
Well, first of all, it's not ending. So
it's trailer,
no. Trailer Park Diaries is kind of a reality fictional podcast that my best friend, Vicky Barbalak, who was a finalist on America's Got Talent. And we had met with All Things Comedy and kind of brainstormed with the great Al Magical, who runs that company with Bill Burr. And
yeah,
he wanted something to do with diaries. And he's just like, I want you to do something with diaries. And I said, okay. And Vicky said, okay. So we kind of went to the drawing board and Vicky's persona that, which is really not just her persona, it's her true life where she lives in a trailer park in Oceanside, wears leopard. She's kind of this like kind of zero F's given, funny American sweetheart type like Roseanne Barr type of persona. And so we wanted to kind of just kind of have that as the background. And then, you know, I'm Vicky's best friend which is true to life. I live in Beverly Hills. Do I live in a mansion in Beverly Hills? No, but we wanted to create that. I, you know, lived in this luxurious lifestyle. I was married to a surgeon. I'm getting a divorce. I have nothing left and I've got to go, you know, I've got to go live near my only friend that's left. And that's Vicky Barbalak, who lives in a trailer park in Oceanside. So I moved to the trailer park and Vicky's the quote manager of the trailer park. And she finds a trunk full of diaries and we start going through these diaries. And we read a couple pages at a time from one diary a season, and then we discuss it. So some things are true, some things aren't. It's improvised. A lot of the stories are pretty real, which is frightening.
I believe it when I listen to it, and you know, I wonder if like, is this, you know, are you improvising here? Did this really happen?
Yeah,
and I feel like that adds to the whole thing. I'm like, did that really happen? And
yeah,
it's like, that's exciting to me. You know, you're
it
not
is.
Just doing a show like this where, you know, people are just talking and whatever.
It's like a lot of work. It's a lot of work
because it's almost like you're doing a sketch, like long form sketch or a film in the sense that, like,
I mean, it's like a sitcom, to be honest.
Yeah,
the diaries.
Good term.
You know, we've worked with those diaries, and it's exciting because this first season we did was kind of like an adventure, kind of a little bit Nancy Drew type of diary. The second season that we're almost finished taping, which will air in July, is like a 50 Shades of Grey diary. It's super dirty.
Getting a little dirty.
Oh, it's dirty. So it's
nice.
It's so different than what we did the first season. And it's really been just, you know, such an interesting project to take on. And Vicky and I've had so much fun. It's such a creative kind of podcast. So
yeah, you can put really so much into it, you know, like a creative outlet to have that kind of like platform. I mean, in addition, the fact that you're all over the place and you're, you know, always performing and writing and producing, that to have that other kind of like outlet, you can like use it as kind of, I'm imagining using it as kind of like, you know, another ground, another avenue to like get some of the other stuff that maybe you can't like produce here or there. But I'm so glad to hear it's not ending. I don't know why I thought that. I thought maybe it was, I read a description wrong, or maybe I'm just a moron. But
no, just read that it was the last episode for season one.
That's what it was.
It sounds like it's ending, but it'll be coming back.
That's why I'm not a good like reporter. Like I majored in journalism and broadcasting, but that example right there, I would just take it and run with it. Like Sean Pawlowski's retiring this week. And you're like, no, it's the end of season.
I wish I was. I'm exhausted. But I could see where people got that. I could see where people, because we didn't have something kind of ready to tag on there, but we recorded something the other day to like just let people know, like, hey, stay tuned. Season two is coming in July.
I'm sure everybody understood what was happening. I'm just a moron, but I do want the listeners to go and check it out. It's streaming everywhere. I listen to it on Apple Podcasts.
Thank you, Matthew. Yeah.
And I hope you guys, we're getting to a more risque kind of things. Is that like something?
There are more drinks. We make a cocktail every episode, and then we name the cocktail. The next season's cocktails have a lot of the words dick in it.
Nice.
And it's definitely been fun. I mean, I'm really enjoying this, and they are, but it's a lot of work to invest creatively to do any type of podcast, as you know, and you know, everybody and their uncles has one. And we just wanted to have something that maybe that would be sellable one day. And what we're finding out is even like little promo videos that we've shot and put together, people really like the dynamic between us because we're kind of like the modern version of Ab Fab. It's these two polar opposites that really have come together as best friends in real life. And we just didn't really know how to utilize that. And now we're kind of figuring that out. We want to take that to the next level.
And you're nailing it with that, I think. And you guys kind of you go on tour and things like that. I remember like last fall, you were in the East Coast and stuff like that.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll go out with Vicky if I'm not out working and then right now I'm getting ready to go back to my producing job for Byron Allen's game show, Funny You Should Ask, in August. So my schedule starts to get a little crazy. Like to go out and be and do, especially with Vicky, because it's so fun to be on the road with her. I can't always make that happen.
Yeah. When you go on the road and like you'll post things, like I think one time, I'm being very specific here. I think it was like you're in Idaho or Montana or something like that. But
Idaho.
But people, not only in the LGBTQ community, which you're an icon in, of course, for all of your work and, you know, for everything you've done over the years, but just, you know, people recognize you. So when you go and people are doing the stretch it out poses and stuff like that, you got to feel like $1 million. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be like one of the highlights of your life, wouldn't it? I mean,
it's really sweet when people do that. You know, last night, somebody stopped outside the Comedy Store and they were like, stretch it out or whatever. But yeah, it's always surprising to me if anybody's caught on to anything. I mean, I hardly feel like, I mean, as a comedian, someone who's been working in this business 279 years, you're just not as good until you always feel like you're not as good as your next gig. And so
right.
I just kind of am always surprised if anybody knows anything about me, even though I've been around for a long time. I'm not a household name, but I've worked really hard, especially within the community. And the running joke with my husband and I is, you'll never see me be stopped by a straight guy. You know, been like, are you Sean Polofsky? Or I saw you at the Comedy Store. Yeah. It's only gay men that recognize me. So no matter where we are, even like we were on a plane going from São Paulo in Brazil to a beach resort in Florianópolis, which was like, and it wasn't even an American airline. It was a Brazilian airline. And we were sitting in a seat and I'm talking to this gay gentleman next to me. And within 2 minutes, because I had a mask on and my hair was back, and he's like, may I ask you something? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, are you Sean Polofsky?
Wow.
And I'm like, yes. And so that was really weird. Like, that's, you're so far away.
Yeah,
and
but
so
that's cool though, like to get that recognized. Happens.
Of course he was gay, but that's, you know, that's the only time I people stop me.
No, that's so cool though. I've never had that problem getting recognized, of course, but I was on a flight once coming to Philadelphia, going back to Philadelphia for
Clark the Shark. Is that Clark you? The Shark.
I'm recording on a separate feed, so don't worry about any of these pop-ups here. So I don't know if you see any pop-ups, but okay. So and I went back there and there was a nice family there and they kept like staring at me. They're like, is that him? Is that him? Oh, that's him from the show. They thought I was somebody else. And I didn't know who it was. But they were all like smiling and the dad's like, how you doing? You going home? And I was like, yeah, where's home for you? And they're like, yeah, it's good. We really like your work. And I'm like, yeah, thank you. And I took pictures with them. And I wanted it for me because I was traveling and I hate flying. So I was like, I'm just going to roll with this. But I was really afraid of being called out. So I was like, what is like your favorite thing I did? They're like, oh, when you were on Desperate Housewives. I was like, yeah, I get that all the time. And I looked up Desperate Housewives. I looked like nothing, like nobody that's anybody that's ever been on that
Jesse
show.
Metcalf? Wasn't he on Desperate Housewives?
Yeah, I don't think I look anything like him though, at least then. Whatever it was though, but I rolled with it. And it was like, it felt like $1 million, even though it wasn't me. So for people to recognize you, that's gotta be such a trip, you know, like you gotta appreciate that, you know, for all you've done. Comedy's
very flattering.
It's super flattering. I want to mention the Comedy Store real quick. You're so connected and well known there, and you've been performing there for years. And you, just on a serious note, your friend who passed away, Jeff, the pianist.
Yes.
You're who I've only met once. He didn't really know me, but I just want to say you're like tributes to him and remembering him, you know, even months after his passing. Was just so touching and just so like moving. So cheers to you. That was like a beautiful thing.
Thank you, Matthew. Well, he wasn't just a pianist at the Comedy Store. He was the Comedy Store. You know, there's two people that made that place. One was the owner, Mitzi Shore, may she rest in peace, who really helped me become the comedian that I am. And if it wasn't for her support and putting me into the trenches of the Comedy Store, I never would be the comic that I am today. And would never have the thick skin that I have today. And Jeff Scott is the reason why you felt welcomed at the Comedy Store. And no matter who you were, it didn't matter if you were female, male, what sex you were. He always was so loving and friendly. And no matter how dark that place can be and how mean comics could be or whatever, how misogynistic it felt in there, he was just kind of that one steady thing about that place that just made you feel loved and supported. And he was so talented. I mean, he wasn't just piano. I mean, I utilized him for every show for Social Media Meltdowns, which I run monthly. He just was such a big part of that. Even in my comedy special, he was on stage with me and we always worked together. And for him to suddenly not be here anymore, it was a real shock to the comedy community. And to each day, it's still a shock to me.
It's beautifully said. I didn't mean it. I just brought everybody down listening.
No, you didn't.
But it was just
so. Jeff loves to be talked about. Yeah, heard that, Jeff.
There you go. It was just so nice and just so touching. And
thank you.
And I won't get into the dark stuff about the Comedy Store or comedy clubs, period. But there, you know, there's a lot of negativity and you know, there can be some intimidation with a lot of comics and things like that. So just have like great people like you. And as we mentioned, Jeff, that's, I think that's like really important to a lot of comedians, especially when you move out to Los Angeles, you know, and you don't know anybody and you're trying to make it as a stand-up. I mean, stand-up comedy is the hardest job to get into in the world. You know, yeah. If you're in a band, at least you have a band to fall back on and other guys. I mean, it's all you up there. It's alone. I have so much respect for comedians such as yourself to do that. But when you moved out here, like you came from Oklahoma, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which, by the way, why don't you have a comedy special called Joklahoma in Tulsa? And no, that could only hurt your career.
But, yeah.
Yeah. That wouldn't be a good idea. I use that joke with Matt Lewis. He's a buddy of mine.
Yeah.
From Oklahoma. And I'm like, why don't you do a podcast called Joklahoma? He's like, we're not doing the name. It's not funny. I'm like, it's funny. It'll work. Joklahoma.
Yeah.
But when you moved out here, was that like, did you know people? Was that intimidating? Like, how did you get, you know, up there?
I went to school at USC. So University of Southern California. And my sister was going there at the time. So I knew her and I knew actually a couple of people going to USC. And I just made friends and established myself. My major was I came from the USC School of Theater, BA. And so I always knew I wanted to perform and do. I mean, I came out to do like really more sketch SNL type of work and improv. And I trained in that. So
at the Groundlings, right?
Yeah. I trained with the Groundlings. I was part of Acme Comedy Theater. I really worked hard that was the avenue that I was going. And then I kind of just did this 180 when I took a stand-up class and I really hadn't done much with it because I was so immersed in the sketch comedy world. And, you know, after then, you know, when I spent some time in sketch comedy for a while, I just didn't think it was as lucrative. I didn't have enough showcase for myself because I was amongst people and this. And so I kind of went back to the stand-up and that's really was kind of the better platform for me. And that took off. So I stuck with that.
That makes sense. I mean, in terms of like, sketch comedy, which I love, you know, so much. I feel like it's a dying breed. Thanks. It's like weird. It's hard. It's just so hard to get people to watch videos anymore that aren't like on TikTok or something. And I'm talking about like pre-written, recorded, edited sketch that's longer than 2 minutes. I used to host a show at Flappers called Share Your Shorts where we would show comedy sketches each month and the submissions were like crazy. It was like, And it just started like kind of dying down. And it's just hard to find like good people that just want to make sketches a lot. It's kind of like a dying, they just want to do their own thing on their phone kind of thing.
And you're great. Strange. You're so great at writing sketches and being in them.
You're
hilarious in them. And you were great when you did my social media meltdowns on our Instagram forum, where we have people that make their own.
Oh, this is a great system, by the way.
You were great at it. And so I love that. I welcome all like comics who could just be creative, even in your own home, you know, but as far as sketches and sketch comedy goes, you're right.
It's super tough to like put that together. But back to social media meltdowns though. I feel like that was my worst performance because I looked like shit that day. And I sent that and I was like, oh no, I look bad. And then it aired and it was like, I think nobody cares, but I was like, you know, always second guess yourself. I was like, oh, I think I could have like, I read a line from like a 7-Eleven review.
It's great.
I was like, oh, I could have did that better, but you were like super cool about it. And thanks for letting me do that.
It was so fun. Well, it's just fun to hear because so much crazy shit is said on the internet through people's just out of their emotions. They post and they put stuff to Yelp or Nextdoor is just one crazy bag of nutty.
I'm sorry.
You can't even like move. You open it up and you're like crazy, crazy,
crazy, crazy,
crazy. And you're like, God, all these people live in California. And there's not one, there's hundreds of thousands in every neighborhood.
All over the place. I lost, thankfully she was found, but my cat, like we got a new kitten a few months ago and she got out and it was like, it was a whole like 24-hour thing. So I joined Nextdoor. I posted it. I went out there. A lady was looking for something. And I was like, hey, are you like looking for a cat? She's like, yeah, I just saw it on Nextdoor. I'm like, oh, thanks for your help. That's kind of creepy. And, you know, and they would like follow up. So like after it was done, I kind of like stopped using Nextdoor because I just use it for that. And like, I keep getting notifications. So like, I turn them off and they keep coming. So I try to like delete my account and like, that didn't work. Like they keep you sucked in. So eventually it was like, if you can't beat it, join them. So I'm just like, hey, like my inner Karen now, I'm like, hey, let's go complain about the fence they're putting up next door. You know, like it's ridiculous how many people are on this app in like three blocks of here.
And it's like, and they love animals more than they love people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, forget it. Like, you can't kill a spider. I mean, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to step on the spider 1,000 times because that spider's trying to kill me. Listen, I don't understand
it. It's trespassing.
But it is so fun with our, and you got to come and do our live show because the live show that when all these stand-up comics find all this stuff on Reddit or Facebook, just a maddening post, and or Twitter wars, and they when they reenact it live or they sing it in a song or however they creatively they want to present one person's verbal diarrhea. Yep. It's our game, and it's so fun. The next doors, Sheila Ratner is this hilarious comic who just can find any next door posts and make it the most hilarious thing that you've ever heard. And just like her biting sarcasm, sarcasm and commentary. It's like, she's a joy to watch. She's definitely a social media meltdowns treasure.
This is why I think social media meltdowns is such a great concept and why it's just going to keep, you know, getting bigger is, you know, we're inundated with all these reviews and we write them in Yelp and, you know, next door, whatever. But the sarcasm is lost on a lot of people, or it's not lost, but there's no like avenue to like output that. So I think it's just such a brilliant, brilliant thing to do because there's just no shortage of it. They write themselves and it's endless. The amount of like nonsense out there that people complain about.
Yeah. It's the comedy is all in just everybody's, it's like everybody just wants to post so much information out there. And like, I sometimes think like, God, this is so personal. Who would say this out loud? But it's all the time. So you're right. There's never
no
shortage of material.
It's crazy. I want to ask you, it's kind of a vague question, but so when you're doing stand-up, what's like a great kind of scenario for you? Scenario? Or like what's like a one you don't want to do? Is it like, do you not like corporate gigs? Is it like, you don't want like kids there? Like what's like some of the things that you're
what
not really
a great
like
one, or what makes a not ideal one?
Like not an ideal one. You know, if you get asked to do a gig, and if you don't want to answer, because whatever, we can move on. But I'm just curious, like, because you perform so much, is there any kind of red flags?
A bar where everybody's talking. There's no real stage at all. There's just like nothing. You're just standing on like a dance floor performing. That's never ideal.
Like at Flappers, they have like the two stages. God bless you. There's the Yoo-hoo room and the main room. And then they put almost like a green screen kind of thing in the bar area. But they do like shows there. And to me, that was always like, you're talking down like a narrow strip where like people are eating and drinking. It was kind of a weird place to do a show. I'm not saying, I don't think you've ever performed there, but like I've been to a few shows there and you're like, this is like a weird scenario. Yeah. Like you can't really hear anything. Like the kitchen's right there. Like I saw the guy just drop my food on the floor and I'm still going to eat it kind of thing. Like it was weird. I mean, so like
nothing is ever ideal. You know, there's so many situations that just never feel ideal, but I've always, if you're hiring me and you're going to pay me money for a corporate gig or for a private gig, I remember I got recommended for this Moms and Margaritas, a personal
Moms
appearance
and margaritas
in Calabasas in someone's house.
Oh.
I walked in and it was 50 really well-off women and with like margaritas and food. And they wanted me to do 45 minutes in their living room. Like it looked like the set of The Bachelor, but there was no stage. There's no mic.
Really?
There's a fireplace going. You know, I'm like, who's going to present the rose to me? And it's all these women, you know, kind of sitting around. And it was weird and awkward, but I just committed to it. And then I guess I got hired again. Someone saw me from that and was like, well, I'm having a Moms and Margaritas. And it was like a competitive Moms and Margaritas thing. And I started getting hired on the Calabasas Moms and Margarita circuit. I mean,
is it like a 40, So like 45 minutes when you're in that kind of like intimate scenario where there's like 30 well-off housewives, whatever, of Calabasas, do you make eye contact? Or do you kind of pick a focal
point?
You have
to talk to them. You have to improvise. You can do your material, but I mean, if you really can't address the weird situation you've been hired for and you can't call it out, then you really shouldn't be taking these type of gigs. And of course it's not ideal. You just want to teleport yourself out of there. There's nothing more you want to do than be like, how do I get out of this? But you just have to assess this situation and be like, you know what? I was hired for this job. So just make this job yours.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good attitude to have. That's why you're a professional. That works. When I worked for the city of West Hollywood, we did this Creative City Award events, maybe 10, 12 years ago. I don't know if you remember this, but they were looking for a comedian. And I was like, oh, Sean Pawlowski's like the best. And then I immediately regretted saying that because I was like, what if I got it? What if I'm getting, we're asking you to do something that's like going to be terrible. And like now my reputation's on the line with you that like, oh, Clark, he's the worst. Thankfully, I think the crowd was pretty good and you were excellent as always.
Thank you for bringing me onto that. I love the WeHo Awards. I loved working. I worked that twice and I enjoyed it immensely.
I'm so glad it worked out and that people were great. Cause I was like so worried, like, what if this is like a stuffy corporate thing? And like, I'm an asshole now, but like it worked out great. And everyone
could never be an asshole. I was very grateful for that opportunity. And I thank you for that.
Oh no. Yeah, of course. And when you get approached to, to get hired for like a gig or a job or something like that, do you have like, you're like, okay, I got to do 45 minutes, like minimum. Do people just want you to like pop in for like a 10 minute set? I'm talking about like kind of these obscure kind of things that you're asked to do. Like, how does that all work?
Like what, elaborate a little bit more.
So for like the margarita and mom's thing.
Uh-huh.
So you said it was like kind of awkward going in there because you have all these.
Oh like, yeah. I'm like, so, I'm walking into a park. It's like a party. And I'm just,
it was like,
they, there,
you had to do like 45 minutes.
Yeah. But I mean, like they didn't start right away. So I'm at the party. I don't know these people. And
that's super like awkward. I'm amazed it was like so long, like 45 minutes. I felt like I would have gotten like 10 minutes.
Or 45 and been like, minutes. Yeah.
Get them out of here.
Yeah.
Wow. What's your favorite spot outside of I assume the Comedy Store is like your haven, your favorite spot in Los Angeles?
Yeah, definitely. La Jolla Comedy Store is actually my favorite stage, I think, anywhere. But I think working on gay cruises, just being in front of the community is usually my favorite place. If it's a room full of gay men, forget about it. Or whoever in the community, it is always a fun, good time. I also really love performing overseas for the troops. That could also get really awkward where you're landing in a Black Hawk at 6 a.m.
So cool.
And you're performing at a forward operating base on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan. And there's like 10 guys, in like lawn chairs with their M16s. And it's like 8 a.m. And they're
what do you do?
Like, what do you want? Come on. Like
that same old Hollywood story, Sean. We've all been there. Pakistan, Afghanistan border with the troops. Please. That's amazing you did that, though. First, I salute you for doing that, supporting the troops and everything. That's like such a cool thing to do. But to really be over there and do that, it has to be like surreal, like an eye opening, to be in that part of the world.
Pretty surreal. But, I always say it was hard to meet the right person in Los Angeles. And at that time I was single. So I had to go where the odds were in my favor. And that was Afghanistan.
Whatever it takes.
That's right.
When you go on the gay cruises, you're going on one soon, right? Like another one. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So is everything like, where do you go on these? First of all, is it like, do you go like Long Beach to like Puerto Vallarta?
No, hardly. This one's leaves. It's mostly Portugal and Spain. So it's out of the Mediterranean. Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, I like it. When you go on here, is it, you perform like, is it like nightly you perform and then the rest of the day, it's like a vacation kind of thing. It's like a party.
No, actually I think it's just one show, during the whole cruise. So I think I'm like the second night out for this one. So, but I think I'm there because this is a smaller, cruise line. It's like a riverboat cruise. It's called Outbound. And it's actually run by Jonathan Bennett, from Mean Girls, the movie Mean Girls. He was
lead. Oh, really?
And yeah, he and his husband James are the ones that chartered these boats. And so it's a smaller group, but I'm also there not just to just perform, but I think when I do these gay cruises, and I've done, of course, bigger gay cruises with like 5,000, 6,000 gay men on a ship. But when I'm brought on, I'm brought on to also be somebody to make people feel good that they are taking this cruise and that they, you know, are representing within the community. And I'm a representative of the community and I'm an ally. So I want everybody to feel welcome. So I also feel like I'm part of the crew because I've been hired to do my job, but I also want people to have this pleasurable experience for their trip.
It's a beautiful thing. And it's awesome you do that. And you are an ally, and being so involved in the community for so long, just the amount of people that you touched and, you know, and helped throughout the years.
And really touched.
Hit him up.
That's a little Benny Hill joke right there.
There it is. Touchy, touchy. But no, you're a rock star and you do all that stuff. And just hats off to you. I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you, California is falling apart. The gas is out of control. I think it's hilarious. I've heard. So, it's hilarious when they're like, the national average is $5. I'm like, I would love $5 gas right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, me too.
And inflation and all that. The big thing is like the gubernatorial race. Do you have any predictions on like, is anyone going to fix this? Is anyone going to win in Sacramento?
I feel like you are correct. California has just become super, super, super messy.
Yeah.
And there's so much hate rate against our state. I will love California till the day I die.
Yes.
Because I just don't think there's any place like this. And I find everything's when you come from Oklahoma, everything else seems like Oklahoma seems like mediocrity. And you can't tell me that it's better over here or it's better over there. I've traveled enough to see for myself.
Yeah.
I understand it's expensive out here to live. Should it be like what it is now? Hoping someone fix it. Is it going to be Rick Caruso? Fucking no. Was a Democrat, was a Republican, and then just changed his title to Democrat at the last minute. Yes. I just find that all completely shady. And I don't have time for that. Like as you stick to your party and you've said what you were minute one and you've been in politics, that's kind of what I like. I just like, politicians, everybody can be dirty and everyone can be this. I just like to see somebody get something done, whether it's going to be, but I do feel like California is going to turn Republican. I do see something.
Yeah.
I get really nervous going, uh-oh.
Yeah. I think a lot of it.
We're about to flip as well. I mean, we did it with Reagan, so.
Yeah, and Schwarzenegger. I feel like you're exactly right. You know, there's so many things going on that a lot of people are like, oh, well, maybe we should do this and try this. And it's going to start to shift a little bit. But funny about Caruso, I wasn't trying to make this all political. I was just really curious what you thought. But funny about him is a lot of people don't realize his like past affiliations and what he's done. And they just think, oh, he's just like a businessman Democrat. And it's like, no, you should like do your homework a little bit. Like that's not the whole
Grove. Like, how much money does that guy have and that he needs power to like change things? He's just going to better it off for the richer. And that's what's going to happen. I mean, I don't really,
he'll
probably try and move some homeless camps. Okay. And I know people are like upset with how there is a lot of homelessness, but again, if we didn't have this pandemic and it's all over, it's not just in California.
Oh yeah.
I think people became destitute because of the situation and it comes from up above. And because we had someone else in office and it's just like the whole system spiraled.
It spiraled out of control.
The top to the bottom.
Yeah. It all trickles down and shit trickles down. And with the whole, like, I'm always skeptical about the rich businessman that's like, I'm going to change things. It's like, where were you like 30 years ago? You know, you decided you had a moonlighting at, you know, age 60, that this is your calling all of a sudden. Like, get the fuck out of here. You know, it's like me being 50 and being like, I want to be a cop. You know, I've always wanted to be a cop. It's like, you didn't, you know, you should have put your money to better use, you know, which you didn't. So that's my whole thing. But I think
if you want to make me like really, if you really want to make me like you, and you're a businessman like that, then, you know, do something to like help end homelessness or donate to feeding people, or I really want to see you active. I don't want you silently know that maybe you donate. I want to really see you trying to make a change, because I just don't believe that that guy really has anybody's best interest at heart.
No, no, not at all. And I want to see more transparency, even if it's not in like a sexy light from people running. Like I was watching Bill Maher the other week, and Schellenberger, the guy running for governor, was on, and you know, he was asked like, what are you going to do about the homeless? He's like, oh, you know, it's a systemic problem and we need to do this. And it's like, everybody knows what the problem is. What are you actually going to do? And it was like, oh, well, we need to like tackle this. And it's like, it's just a lot of broad strokes. And I would like one candidate to be like, we're not going to be able to do this, but we can make this a little bit better for down the line and then do this. Like, just, it's a lot of like, I'm going to fix everything. Like Caruso's coming in, like, you know, white horse, blazing guns. Like, we're going to kick me out of office in 30 days if this isn't fixed. And it's like, you don't think that every guy in that office was trying to fix the problem? Like, that's all they hear every day. Like, it's a lot tougher to do. Just be honest and say, we're going to build 30 shelters and that will get 50% of the people off the streets or something. You know, it's just like, there's so much like blue sky stuff going on.
You're right. Just, completely.
Anyway, I turned this too political. I do apologize, but
no, you didn't. You're fine.
Before we go, what's the next? So the gay cruise, when you're back from this, do you have like things lined up for this summer that you're looking forward to? Or are you?
I'm still doing social media meltdowns monthly at the Improv and just working on selling that as a show and then going back to work as producing on the game show Funny You Should Ask. That starts in August. And just wherever I can appear personally, I'll still be at the Comedy Store Weekly or Improv, and I'm out and about and doing, just, you know, always creating and trying whatnot.
You're living the dream. Well, you're That's a rock star, it. Sean.
So are you. So are you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming on today and taking the time to do it.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for doing social media meltdowns. You were great.
Oh, thank you so much. And please follow everybody, Sean Pawlowski at Sean Pawlowski Comedy on Facebook and at Sean Pawlowski on Twitter and Instagram. And is your TikTok Sean Pawlowski?
It is. You know, it just rolls off your tongue, Sean Pawlowski.
I love that it's all consistent too. I'm all over the place. I'm like, yeah, it's Kingman Prods or Shark Matthew. Like, there's no branding. You're very like, we know where.
Well, you've got a more generic name than I do. I mean, what else? If there's another Sean Pawlowski, well, then I'm gonna lay down and it's over. I'm quitting.
I use that. The only reason I'm glad to have such a generic name is if like somebody's searching me that I don't want to, or like a job search, they try to, you know, Facebook Matthew Clark, you're not going to find me. There's too many of us.
Smart.
That's the only thing that works for. Otherwise, I'm just another white guy from the burbs faking the funk.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, how do you say thank you in Portuguese?
Obrigado.
Obrigado. So obrigado, Sean. And thank you as always.
Ciao.
Ciao.